Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Oh.
It's first.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
We should stop podcasting during the summer because it's just too hot. It's too hot to do these things. We do it at nighttime. Yes. It's late. It's still incredibly hot outside. It's hot inside. It's bad. It's bad.
Yes, it is 77 in here. What is it in your room?
80.4, 37% humidity.
Oh, good. 26% humidity because the AC's been running, so it's a little dry.
I was also so caught up in my internet research before we're doing this, I forgot to take off my shirt like I normally do. Not that I normally do that.
Everybody needed that mental image.
That was only for the bootleg listeners a couple episodes ago. But now everyone knows my secret, my horrible sweaty secret.
My secret is I'm always half naked.
I'm always sweaty.
Well, wait. Don't correct me. On half naked. Just don't correct me on that. I don't want to know.
Oh, as opposed to being full naked? I've never podcasted naked. That would be, only my chair would appreciate that.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Glad we do this.
It really is a gift every week, isn't it? This time we spend together.
It is the giftiest gift. It is totally, yes. But I mean, I like you. Most of the time, and I like talking to you.
That was believable.
So, yeah. I mean, more believable than some people's acting in the course of this film, but that's debatable, I guess.
You know, there's parents. Just parents doing what parents do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, we continue.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel. Mm-hmm. Wagushington.
See, I even practiced it yesterday. Wagustishington.
Did you stand in front of a mirror and you were just like, unique New York, and then...
No, I think I'm in the shower and I just keep going, Augustishington. Augustishington. See, I think it's the W that it makes it additionally difficult. If you just say Augustishington, that's easier.
Yeah.
If you say
Augustishington.
It's Worcestershire.
All right, so we talked
August
about
Washington, Worcestershire. That's got to be something that a theater actor has tried, right?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, sure.
What's your work?
Man on Fire, 2004. Mm-hmm. Which is apparently a remake that I just discovered about 5 minutes ago of a 1987 movie by the same name, based on a novel of the 1980 novel of the same name.
Yeah, so turns out this is a movie that I had seen extensive promotions for and heard people talk about, but had never investigated, like, in any sense at all. I believe this was during the time of my life where Dakota Fanning was in a couple properties, and I was like, I'm good. I don't need Dakota Fanning in my life.
In War of the Worlds? Was she very big in the early 2000s? Well, not big. She was very small. She was a small child.
Yes, she was quite petite. But she was in things in that era. Much in the same way as what's his face from AI? I See Dead People. That guy. He was a child actor, and he was in things, and then he wasn't in things anymore, because that's how being a child actor works.
He's in, although he was in Silicon Valley last season or two.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
I haven't investigated to see what Dakota Fanning is up to. I think she was in a Twilight or something, maybe.
That sounds about right. I don't know either. Yeah. I think she's still doing things.
She was in Ocean's 8.
Oh, look at that. Ocean's...
Yeah.
Apparently she's in pre-production for The Bell Jar right now. That'll be...
Yeah. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. What is that? That sounds familiar.
It's familiar.
What's his name?
Mm-hmm.
That's Tarantino killing the lady.
Yes. Sure, nothing bad will happen to her in that movie. But,
you know, Tarantino, I think he has a strong tradition of respecting his female.
Yes.
cast members.
Loves respecting women.
I'm sorry, tone of voice you just used all that.
Yeah. Well, you mean that disingenuous tone of voice that I used? That was just... Made you laugh?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway. So, anyway, this is a movie based on a book, and it is a remake, in a sense, of another movie based on the same book. But from what I gather, this is not a situation where it's like, let's do a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho.
According to the trailer for the other one that I just watched, that one takes place in Italy.
Yes. Well, the book took place in Italy.
Oh. But Italy's by the just time not the scary place it used to be anymore, apparently.
That is what happened. When they were in pre-production for this, they said, hey, you know what? Kidnappings, not as popular as they used to be in Italy. So let's move the production. And they picked it up and placed it in Mexico City. Now, current crime kidnapping stats, I'm not up to speed on, but apparently the filmmakers felt it was justified at the time.
What did they say at the beginning of the title card? They're like once an hour or something, once a day. I forget what it was. 12 a day, 60 a day?
Something along those lines. I think it was like, and Dakota Fanning has a line in the early part of the film where she mentions that it's like 4 a week, I think, or 6 a week every 4 weeks or something like that. Something like 24 abductions have occurred in the last month. Basically they try to say like, hey, kidnapping happens a lot, and there is such a thing as kidnapping insurance and bodyguards. And there is a wealth disparity where people who might not have a lot will go after people who seem to have a lot and try to extract wealth from them. And there is also a situation where you can get insurance for that, and you can get slimy lawyers to help you with all of these things. Now, that is a thing about the setting for why they moved it here. From Italy, but there is plenty of flavor, of Mexico City to be had. But I would say that it's not shown always in the best light necessarily.
When is it shown in a good light?
I don't know. Chef's Table. There's like a good episode in Mexico City.
I meant in this movie. They're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't.
Yeah. No. No. In this movie, it's kind of like. And then crime. So
it's like large walls, razor wire, and crime.
Yeah. Basically, it's like it is depicted as a place with federal and local institutions of justice that are corrupt. So you might get a good cop, you might get a bad cop. Not in the good cop, bad cop scenario speaking, but in corrupt or not corrupt kind of a way. So you just kind of have to look out for your Italian Interpol operatives and hope you get one of them so you don't die. But that is interesting. They did try to have a character, the Reforma journalist, who is played by Rachel Ticotin, which I believe is how you say her name, who plays Mariana Garcia Guerrero, who is a reporter, and she's trying to, you know, uncover corruption. And
oh,
you
my
get,
God, I just realized she was from Total Recall.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bad movie. It's a really bad movie.
Anyway, sorry. And Con Air and Falling Down. Oh, my God. How did I not remember she was in all this? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, she used to be married to David Caruso.
I feel like a lot of people used to be married to David Caruso. I have no evidence of that. But
aren't we all formerly married to David Caruso?
But we, the audience, used to be married to David Caruso and are no longer.
Wow. Three former wives, one current, separated.
Oh, I didn't actually need you to vet that, but thank you. I appreciate the hard work you just did there. Real-time follow-up.
Quite the romantic that David Caruso.
What percentage of the fights in his relationship do you think were due to him taking off his glasses in a dramatic fashion and finishing his pun statements?
I don't know, or maybe just like his general temperament. But anyway.
Your first time seeing this movie, you enjoyed Rachel Ticotin.
Yes.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I momentarily slandered her as saying that she was from the remake of Total Recall and not the original.
She was totally in the original, which, you know, is bad in its own way, but in a good way sometimes, sort of.
Yeah. It's good, bad. Not bad.
Right. That's that other show that you watch.
A movie kind of like. But.
Was this a movie you kind of like? What did you think? Well, don't give me your summary in that sense. But like, what did you think about the movie?
Let's do our pre-final judgments. I really like parts of things in fragments of scenes of this, and I could see how you could make a movie out of it, but I am so overwhelmingly appalled by the way this movie is put together that I find it impenetrable for me to feel anything about what I'm seeing, because it's like, I don't know. How should I describe this? If you were an overzealous student at a film school and you were like, let me do everything all at once, and you did all of it, every camera angle, every technique, every style, every weird thing you could think to do with the camera, if you did all of that, put it in a blender, and then made your student masterpiece, then you would have what constitutes the cinematography in this by Paul Cameron. I find it incredibly distracting. So much so that there are moments in here where we have extended scenes consisting of probably 20, 30 cuts of various pieces of footage, which are all sped up, retimed, overexposed, double exposed, triple exposed, retimed again.
Like freeze frame versions. There's like strobe effects. There's streaks. You got all kinds of stuff in there.
God, it drives me bananas. I will say that my personal feeling about cameras is that I should not be really conscious of what's happening.
you weren't brought into the feeling of the cinematography. It didn't add anything to it. It was just moving the images around on the screen in an unpleasant way that you had to try and follow.
Yeah, it was like, you know what? He's gonna have a suicide scene, so let's do a bunch of stuff. And whereas I'm sitting there watching it and going, I guess that was a suicide scene? Maybe. Did he actually try to shoot himself, or was that supposed to be a dream? Because they shot it the same way one might shoot, like, a dream fragment.
Right, and it's montage, too, and it's also, like, double, triple exposed, and then it's, like, speed ramped. So it's, like, it's metaphor and style and shorthand, but then, like, it's repeated shorthand with the montaging. Like, it's montaged, but then the montage is repeated enough that it, like, is basically real time with what would have actually occurred anyway.
Yeah. I heard you like montages in your montage. But, I don't care for this at all. I find it really distracting, and it throws me out of every moment that's supposed to have any sort of impact. Particularly with the kidnapping of Dakota Fanning, where it's supposed to be like, oh no, they've, you know, finally come to grow close to one another. Denzel Washington has dropped his barriers. He cares about this kid. He's doing his job. He's not an alcoholic, blah, 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 blah. And then this is finally the kidnapping occurring. And I'm watching it going, why, what has happened? Nope. Why did we switch to the... No, okay, so we switched back to that other camera angle? No, we're going back over there. Okay, but it's part of that camera angle and that camera angle because we're exposing the... Okay, and then we're back again around the other... Okay, so now we're back over in the other corner. He shot someone. Who did he shoot? Were they on the left? Oh, wait, he shot somebody else over there. Were they on the right? I don't understand
what's
happening.
It's really about the chaos of doing battle and things like that. It's...
No, it's BS!
The none of the cinematography, camera work, whatever in this movie is motivated by anything other than style, which means if you try to think about it, it's not gonna work.
This is the Oakleys of cinematography. I don't care for this one iota. It makes it, because like I said, there are so many good, interesting things in sprinkled out throughout this thing. Like, you get Christopher Walken, you get Denzel Washington, you get Dakota Fanning and Denzel Washington warming up to one another. You get moments with your great reporter, your journalist. You get moments with the corrupt, sleazy Mickey Rourke trying to manipulate things. You get all kinds of stuff, but it's sprinkled through this minefield of exposure nonsense and speed ramps that it's just like, I don't know. I've never seen anything like this. Like, Zack Snyder, in his wildest imagination, could not have dreamt this movie up.
It's Tony Scott. This is early 2000s Tony Scott. This is where he went after all of the teal and orange and smoke through window blinds lost its luster. He tried to create a new thing, and this is what it was. And this was parodied to death by a lot of people.
Remember the app Luster?
Yeah, from Da Vinci.
Yeah.
Or, no, Autodesk. Jesus.
Okay. Whatever happened to Luster?
I think it's still for sale.
Oh, I mean, so nobody... Maybe he wouldn't have lost his luster, then.
I mean, in a world where Da Vinci Resolve is basically free...
In a world where Da Vinci Resolve
is free, who are the people still paying for Autodesk Luster?
Didn't it come with, a special, hardware... console thing that you can buy.
Yeah. I mean, Resolve has many hardware consoles too, but the Luster hardware console was, if I recall, it was massive. It was the size of the whole desk, but it was also just as inscrutable as everything Autodesk had ever made.
Well, that's why you pay the big bucks.
Yeah, it had one of those icons, like all of Autodesk products, like a little seahorse or like a turtle or something, whatever the hell their logos were. Which one was the seahorse? Was smoke, wasn't it?
It could have been.
Yeah, I think I think I tried to download the first beta of Smoke on Mac just because I wanted a little seahorse guy.
Oh, there are easier ways to get an image of a seahorse.
Oh, it was a cool illustrated seahorse. One of the NABs I went to was when I think they first put the Autodesk stuff on Linux, and they had a giant banner outside of the Las Vegas Convention Center with all of the little logos, all the little seahorses, and I don't remember what they were, like birds and lizards and stuff. What all of the little animals,
all the great little animals. But anyway, as we had mentioned, Tony Scott and Denzel Washington, they had worked together previously on Crimson Tide, which we have covered on this podcast already. Mm-hmm. And a curious little wrinkle: Tony Scott was not one of the first directors considered for this. Antoine Fuqua was, who was the director of the last one. And the drug lord who gets killed in the last one, in the last movie we talked about, in Training Day, is Scott Glenn, who played the character of Creasy in the original version of this.
Yep.
Isn't that bananas?
Kevin
what a
Bacon.
Coin geek.
Seven Steps. Or whatever. What's the game called? Seven,
Six Degrees of Greasy? Creasy?
The Six Degrees of Creasy. That's good. Yeah. I would play that game. Get yourself back to John Creasy. It could be either John Creasy.
Six Decreases of...
No.
No. No, but, I feel like this is well written. I feel like I can believe many of these moments in here, acting-wise. They just messed it all up. By, I don't know, cocaine? Whatever the drug du jour was that made them decide no one could sit through 5 seconds of photography without changing something.
He was trying to do a style thing, and the style did resonate with people. People did try to do a lot of this stuff in the wake of this movie and try to mimic the style a little bit, including Tony Scott himself, I believe, but
Tony Scott tried to emulate Tony Scott.
He tried to continue with the style, not to a lesser degree of success, believe. But it's one of those things, you know. Like, there's only they probably shot 8 times as much footage as they needed for this movie because it's hand crank 35mm, and that sucks to do. To actually run a hand crank camera and then to process it all and then make it not look terrible.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Mm.
So after this, you got your Dominoes, and you got your Deja Vu, and you got your Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 remake by Tony Scott.
He did Deja Vu. That's a very bad movie.
Yeah. And you got your Unstoppable. So that's several Denzel Washington movies that he did after this.
What's that?
That is interesting.
Was that the train one with Chris Pine?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess Denzel Washington and Tony Scott really like working together. That's interesting.
Apparently Christopher Walken's in Domino as well.
Why wouldn't he be?
You should see this photo.
And I mean, you got Deja Vu, which also has Denzel Washington in it.
Deja Vu is not... No. Deja Vu is... No.
And Domino has Mickey Rourke.
Oh my god, I just noticed that too.
Oh man.
I've never seen Domino. I've seen the trailers, and the trailer was all I needed to see to know that I didn't want to see that movie, but now I kind of want to watch the movie just to see it. Because it's very green, much like Man on Fire.
I believe I saw the trailer for it, and I can confirm that the trailer that I saw was green, but... No other information exists for me in my mind about it. It seemed like it was some sort of take on on Snatch.
Maybe.
Remember the movie by the English guy?
Yeah, I remember.
The English guy.
I think of it more as like a Smoke and Aces. Did you see Smoke and Aces?
I did not see Smoke and Aces.
Oh, you need to see Smoke and Aces and probably not see these other movies.
I'm not sure I need to see any of these, but...
It's got Alicia Keys in it.
That's a qualifier?
She's good in it. It's not called Girl on Fire, though, but that would have been useful.
In Man on Fire, a movie that we watched and are ostensibly talking about, but...
Yeah, sure,
to have
Man on Fire.
Yeah, we seem to have derailed ourselves because we're bored talking about the movie. But you kind of have a 2.5-hour movie here where...
It's really long, isn't it? And part of it is because they are trying to do a stylistic thing, like kind of more so than a specific linear story. And in pieces and parts, I think some of the stylistic stuff works. I didn't hate it nearly as much as you did. But
was that when he was swimming... in reverse with the blood coming out of his bandages?
I think it was the part where the Nine Inch Nails song was playing.
Oh.
That, you know, that hour and 45 minutes of this 2.5-hour movie where that one eight-minute Nine Inch Nails song continues to play.
Yeah. So, the music in this is very strange. I have never heard Oye Como Va put to me like visuals quite like somebody having their finger severed.
That was a pretty good scene. I like that scene.
That was interesting. Although I feel like it was a little over the top when they switched to the Spanish language version of Mickey. For "Oh Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind, hey Mickey," because that's over the part of like finding out who the bad people are. And of course Mickey Rourke, he's bad.
So. I must have missed that particular song.
Yes. Well, Mickey, he's so fine. He's so fine, he blew your mind.
And by blew your mind, Mickey, you mean cut his head off.
Well, so this movie starts with some helpful information about the number of kidnappings that occur. And then we get we have the moment with Mark Anthony, and
there's also a montage of another kidnapping happening over the credits, just in case you wanted to see like a real short version of what the rest of the movie is going to be like.
Yeah, in case you were like, you know what, I need a primer on gruesome murder and kidnapping and horribly maiming somebody. There you go. But that is your primer. But we move quickly to Mickey Rourke and Mark Anthony having their conversation about their AIG insurance package for kidnapping and how they need to have another bodyguard before the AIG insurance renewal, because if they don't, then they won't get the insurance. So he agrees to do the thing. We get Denzel Washington going over the bridge in El Paso to Juarez, where he meets Christopher Walken, who has his place there and apparently seems to run some sort of thing. And
there's like a staffing agency for not hitmen per se, but bad people.
It was unclear exactly the specifics. It seemed like he said something along the lines of like, I have people who want to stay on this side because they feel safer, et cetera, but I shuttle people back and forth and I have factories or something. He seemed to be involved in several things, but
he's like, he's like a madam, but for, assassins.
Very unique. Denzel Washington, has been drinking from a flask, which is movie code language for this person has a drinking problem because who else would drink from a flask? And yet you will see flasks at literally every airport. I don't understand.
You see people drinking out of flasks at airports?
No. Not drinking out of them. It'd be like the novelty, like.
Oh, yeah.
You know, L.A., Phoenix.
I have,
you know,
some
Cocopelli
flasks. I think yeah. One of them has like a mustache on it or something.
Yeah, I don't have any flasks, but.
You should have gone to high school in Arizona with my friend.
I should have. Oh, shucks. But he's got his flask that he's drinking his Jack out of in the back of his taxi as he goes to Christopher Walken's place where he drinks more Jack, and they talk about how, you know, do you think God will ever forgive us for what we've done? So it seems perhaps they were involved in some rough stuff, and they were involved in things. We don't get a clear picture on everything they were involved in, but apparently they used to work for the U.S. Navy, Army.
Marines, I think.
Marines, something. Yeah, okay. The Marines. But in the novel, I think it was the French Legion, which
that explains his hair.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's a good thing to change from the original thing to this. Not a lot of people in the French Legion these days, but you have... I feel like that was the kind of thing that you would see all the time in, like, a Pink Panther cartoon. Like, those incredibly old Pink Panther cartoons. But he's like, you know, we've done some stuff. And we don't exactly get an idea of everything they've done. But it appears to be liberating, quotes, and helping, quotes, certain things happen in different parts of the world. And how much of that is... under the auspices of the U.S. government and how much of that is like their own thing. Cause, Denzel Washington says that even after the stuff they used to do for the government, he went off and did his own stuff in Colombia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, trying to like, you know, get right with whatever it is that's going on inside of him. But, he's an alcoholic and he can't do stuff anymore and he feels bad.
He's a lost soul that, he's good at killing people. He's a killing artist.
Yes. Well, we don't get that lovely line yet, but this is where Walken's like, you know, I heard of a job, and he offers up the bodyguard position to Denzel Washington and says, you know, you got to take this, you know, it's not that bad, and he says helpfully, like, they're not paying you enough to like go way out of your way, but you know, go enough out of your way, like, you even on a bad day when you're, you know, drunk, you're still better than most people. But this, you know, gets him into the situation where he interviews Mark Anthony. Mark Anthony's like, yeah, you'll do, but don't tell my wife about the drinking thing. And then we get introduced to the wife, and the wife is, like straight out of like a film noir kind of a thing where it's like, here's your, you know, dame who like blah, blah, blah. And it's like, ugh, this, I feel like the wife is underwritten and it seems to kind of be in a really sexist blob of a position because she's sort of, how can I say this? She seems like she's coming on strong to Denzel Washington in their initial meetings where she's like, oh, I'm interested in having you around the house and stuff like that, where she seems like more into it than maybe she ought, but I couldn't
she's
place whether that was her
in,
performance
in her,
or the writing.
She's just sizing him up in her poorly illustrated southern slash living in Mexico trophy wife role. I don't I don't know.
She's Australian, by the way.
She's Australian?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what accent she was trying to do in this movie, but it wasn't that.
No, what she was doing was a multitude of things. She was weaving in and out of, like, standard American and some sort of Southern American thing. And I say some sort of Southern because if you asked me to pick, like, Kentucky or Texas or anything, I could not discern any of that from what was happening here. And it seemed to be at its most affected when she was crying or supposed to be emoting the most. And then in scenes where she was supposed to be having dialogue, it seemed to be dialed down. So it was very strange because
she would,
suddenly
pick it up,
go
like when she's about to leave a room and or like talk to a driver or somebody else, then it would come back. But yeah, it was mostly gone most of the time.
Yeah, but it would just be like those occasional spikes. Particularly, I find it distracting when it's supposed to be an emotional moment in the film, and you're like, "What is happening with your voice?" But that was an unfortunate situation that she was in.
Part of it's writing too, like when she's yelling at Mark Anthony about whether or not he was involved in the thing. It's very bad acting, mostly because of the lines she has to say. You know, she's shouting, yeah, "I love you. Tell me what happened." It's like, oh my God, please stop. Please stop with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm no expert on heterosexual relationships, but I have a feeling like "I love you" might not be the thing that she would yell in the circumstances that she was in.
Well, you know, she's there just to be his trophy wife, so she's not really allowed to get mad until her husband literally maybe had their daughter killed.
Yeah. I will be honest with you in that I'm actually happy that Denzel Washington died at the end of the film, not because I wanted him to die, but because I feared if they had kept him alive, I did not want to see a scene with the two of them going off into the sunset and being like, "Yay, we're a family now." I'd be like, "No, this is too much baggage. You can never be with one another ever again. This is all messed up." Because it seemed like perhaps other movies might have leaned more heavily in that direction, because they do wind up going down the road of having Dakota Fanning's character being fine-ish. And recoverable, I should say, whereas, you know, many people might have written her off for dead.
I mean, it would barely be any more bizarre than like when she was like poking her head around the corner to see them like doing homework together or whatever in her room. And the mom's dressed up in like some like ridiculous like club dress and high heels. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, she even has that weird line where she's like, "Oh, how weird is it that I borrowed your Bible? Because I used to be so concerned about clubbing, but now I'm borrowing Bibles. Who am I?"
And it's like, supposed to be like 24 or something.
I don't know what their deal is. It's very strange because she also doesn't seem terribly distraught about her daughter's situation, except for when it calls for hysterical crying in the script. And then she's hysterical crying. But then the rest of the time, she's not as upset. I mean, who am I to critique the loss of a child? But it just, where she is in her life, I don't understand or comprehend at all. And sometimes she borrows him as a bodyguard for like hairdressing appointments and stuff. So seemingly she's threatened, or at least, you know, likes his presence. So
or just likes to be driven around or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's possible. But they seem to employ a large number of people to do things for them.
They have a very large house.
Yeah, they also seem to have a driver service that at least takes them to and from the airport, and whatever the dog shelter is where they can acquire a Labrador.
Did I hear that the dog's name was Sam too? Like they named the dog after Mark Anthony?
Yeah, that was weird. But I mean, she seems to be in a position where she names things after other people in her life. So she named her teddy bear after Creasy, and she named the dog after her dad. But there you go. There's that.
It's fine.
Weird.
It's whatever.
I mean, maybe
she's a young child.
it's possible she could have changed the name of the dog when she gets back and her mom tells her, you know, maybe your dad shot himself in the head because he couldn't bear the loss of you over his insurance fraud scheme.
I mean, that's, they got their $5 million, right? Theoretically, although maybe they could have been arrested for the fraud associated with that and the money taken back, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's a sequel called, you know, Ashes to Not Fire, but they have this situation where she, and it was kind of clear to me from the beginning that someone was setting her up to not be there anymore because they wanted to collect money off of the insurance plan that they had. And it seemed like that was Mark Anthony and the lawyer. And it turns out it was Mark Anthony and the lawyer. But
the little look that Mark Anthony gave out the back window of the car when they were driving away to the business meeting that apparently his wife had to go to as well. That was not super subtle.
No,
but nor that was also the first time that they left, not the other time.
Yeah, nor was the conversation about how she needed to participate in her piano lessons. How critical that was.
Oh, you mean because, while he golfed against his digital golf screen there?
Yeah, because you see, piano is where she happened to be the most vulnerable for abductions. And that is, of course, where the abduction took place. So, ergo, you know, logic to logic, here you have your Mark Anthony's and et cetera's who are involved in this scenario. I would assume that he was involved in it. I think the real wrinkle that they had not anticipated was the involvement of the corrupt federal person. But on the other hand, I didn't quite understand how that all worked because he was in charge of La Hermandad, he was the head, as he said, the head of La Hermandad.
The president.
Yes, but the people who did the abduction were involved with La Hermandad, so somehow...
Oh, yeah, everybody's in it, but there's different groups who may not be privy to certain things.
Yeah, so somehow he shot other La Hermandad associated people as part of this scheme, which is where everything went awry, because if they had given the money to the people who did the thing and the nephew hadn't been killed, then they would have the daughter back, but they would have the money that they had embezzled through this process still.
I'm going to give you my headcanon version of that when you're done there.
Okay, but because they had the shootout occur after Mark Anthony did the drop, then they find out that there isn't all this money, and they find out that the girl won't be returned because of the shootout that killed the nephew, and you know there's nothing more important than family. but you have this all untangle their insurance fraud scheme, and that's why Mark Anthony kills Mickey Rourke in his little pool thing. But doesn't make a ton of sense because theoretically Mark Anthony and his lawyer knew how to contact these people, so they could have turned them into the, I don't know, they could have involved the government in some capacity, but they didn't seem to want to do that. But they also knew that the government had messed up this other part of it, but because they were corrupt, it was very tangled how that all went down.
Yeah, because the cops got involved sort of by force. They didn't want to be involved, but he set up the kidnapping himself, which means that the voice must have known that he was only getting $5 million instead of $2.5 million, because Samuel was getting $5 million and then Jordan Kalfas was getting $2.5 million. But then also the cops robbed the drop, which, all right, maybe the cops like let the voice do his thing as often as he wants, but every now and again they're gonna like step in and take the money, and there's nothing he can do about that because it's just kind of the balance between the cops and the bad guys or whatever. So occasionally the cops just steal stuff and it doesn't all go to the voice dude. But I guess it has to be the killing of the brother, cousin, nephew, whatever, who got shot. That is the reason that
brothers, cousins, nephews, former roommate. But that was a reference. But anyway,
that sounds familiar, but I didn't get it.
Spaceballs.
Oh yes, right, of course. the classic Spaceballs.
Yes, the classic Spaceballs.
Did we do that movie on this show?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we did. Yeah. That's why I asked you.
you were just making sure that I knew that we did this movie.
Yeah, just making sure that you recalled that wonderful episode, mm-hmm. Episode number, insert the number here in the edit, that we did.
Man, you're just making more work for yourself. But so anyway, this situation is untenable because we have this half of the movie where Denzel Washington is learning to love again feel things and be happy and content with life.
He's learning to love again. He's never had a family. He's never settled down. He doesn't have any kids.
Yeah, but theoretically, at some point in his life, he was a little better off than he is by the time we meet him at the start of this picture.
I guess, but like even like unstable assassins occasionally have children out of wedlock and then, you know, use that as their way to reach back into society or something, but he never even did that.
Yeah, that's some real positive outlook you have there. But he doesn't have anything going on for him, really. But that's basically one half of this picture. And then the other half of this is a revenge film about vigilante justice and maiming and violence. So one half plays very differently from the other half, I would say, where prior to her abduction, things are kind of chill-ish. And then after her abduction, things go in a very grotesque, violent sort of a way. And you might say, oh, well, that's because someone has been kidnapped now, and so vengeance must be extracted. But there is a lot of blood on screen that maybe
you,
we
you
didn't.
Mean literal gruesomeness in the movie.
Yeah. Like, it's not hypothetical. He doesn't do it off screen. He is, you know, chopping off fingers and shooting up people with shotguns and things. Like, it's not tidy behind the scenes kind of a stuff.
No, he's I was watching Collateral on TV the other day, which is another very good movie. It's another one of those characters.
We did that one too.
I know.
By the
I
way.
Remember this. Casey List was
insert
on that
number
show.
Here.
It was like number 9 or something. That was like way early days back when we had guests and stuff that weren't set.
back when we used to do custom show art for things. But
I said we. That was all you. Well, actually, you still do show art, but like actual podcast show. Anyway, it's another movie like Collateral, where your main character is a guy who, like, you know, the odds are stacked against him that he's just gonna like he's gonna be the guy who's bold enough to just like walk into a room full of people and just start blasting away because it's so unexpected, and he usually gets away because people are just like so caught off guard. But eventually, it's gonna catch up with him, and it does catch up with him here. I mean, he took 3 bullets in the initial kidnapping. He takes another one pretty square in the chest in that last scene there. And it's, you know, he's just got to keep moving forward as best and fast as he can to try and resolve everything. But yeah, it's, he's there to screw people up. He's there to kill lots of people and do bad things and torture them and get information out of them. Because he knows the quickest, most efficient ways to get the information that he needs. And, you know, he gets enough information to go, all right, who's the next guy I got to go interrogate? And then he kills that guy.
Yep. And
what's your favorite maiming, though? That's what I was going to ask you. I have a favorite maiming.
I think it's probably the Oya Komova one, just because it's just like, what is happening? I think it was unexpected up until that point, exactly what would be occurring. Because I thought he was just sort of like violently threatening people. But there's something about the combination of Tito Puente and severing someone's finger that it was just sort of like, this is the thing that I'm seeing on screen right now. But
I thought he would have brought some like hedge clippers or something for like pruning to do the fingers instead of just a pocket knife.
I feel like one is more portable than the other, perhaps.
Well, just those little, the little ones that are shaped like a pair of scissors or whatever, but they're used for like trimming rose bushes or something.
Oh, yes. Well, every rose has its thorn, but every work has its thorn. But what was your, I guess, favorite, quote unquote, if that's what the terminology we're going for, favorite maiming?
My favorite maiming is when he hands the phone to the brother, and then the brother puts the phone up to his ear right as he puts the shotgun in his hand and blows all his fingers off. That's a pretty good one.
Ugh. I did not care for that one. It was a little hamburgery for me.
It's brutal. It gets the effect across. You know, he wanted the shrieking to go right into the phone and to really sort of say, like, hey, this isn't a negotiation. I am, what does he literally say? I'm going to take your family apart piece by piece and come get you.
Yeah.
I think it was effective at his communicating his intent.
He does. It's kind of weird, though, the way that he gives the guy the phone and shoots off the fingers, because the guy could have, like, in shock, dropped the phone, but he holds on to the phone.
Oh, even if he dropped it, probably the message probably would have gotten through.
Yeah.
It was very loud screaming, as one would imagine if you had a point blank shotgun.
Yeah,
in your hand.
He would have to run downstairs. But the other thing. The one other maiming, major maiming, that we haven't mentioned is not so much a maiming as it is an explosion. And that is the corrupt federal head of La Hermandad, the guy who was more heavily protected than the president, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, where Denzel Washington somehow gets his hands on an RPG and goes into the apartment of some little old couple and then shoots his RPG at a truck full of what may or may not be corrupt cops. We don't know because they're not characters, and they die in a fire explosion. And then he takes the Lincoln Town car that has a corrupt guy, drives him somewhere, and when he wakes up from consciousness, he has a conversation about the way that you smuggle drugs and certain paraphernalia inside of places with a certain device, a piece of plastic, and how there's one of those with some C4 and detonator up his butt and a pager, and it's a very crude explosive device, but he has X number of minutes before the thing, and so they have a little conversation, and then he blows up as Denzel Washington dramatically walks away. And you might see that shot of Denzel Washington dramatically walking away and being like, you know what? That's just like one of those movies where somebody walks away from an explosion and it's very dramatic and stuff. And then on the other hand, you might be thinking, that guy blew up from the inside of his colon out. So that's very strange.
Oh, when you gotta go, you gotta go.
Oh, oof. Do not go in there.
He's everywhere.
Yeah. So he got all over the place with that one. There was a lesser maiming that occurs in the nightclub with the guy from New Jersey, where he shoots stuff related to him, and there's the little old lady who's in charge of maintaining people inside of a pen for the abducted children, and he doesn't kill her, handcuffs her to a steering wheel, which is probably for the best, because that's one of those things where a movie might be able to get away with killing all of the men involved in something, but a movie can't really get away with killing all the women involved with something. So,
Kreese is a gentleman at heart, really.
Yes. He understands how hard they have it in life. It's really about the glass ceiling in the workplace, because there's only so far you can get promoted in the kidnapping of children ring.
To quote 21 Jump Street, it might have been sexist for him to not shoot her, technically.
Right. Yes.
Anyway, so I mean, you can't really go wrong with Denzel Washington being like a badass assassin who runs around killing people in interesting assassin-y ways, trying to track down a girl who has made him see life again or whatever. And you got Christopher Walken there, and you got crazy cinematography and stuff. So, I don't know. It's just like, it's a big blender of stuff. And then, you know, there's the movie. It is very long. Like, I as with most things, I usually catch it on TV, and you only see, like, you know, a third of it, which is still 45 minutes or something. But,
It's 47 minutes in that the abduction happens.
Yeah, I was watching that too because I had to airplay it from my phone to my Apple TV because Max Go doesn't have an app anywhere.
Oh. Sorry.
It's fine. It only disconnected from the Apple TV twice while I was watching.
That's better than Skype. But so the important takeaway, I think, from our time watching this picture is that don't cross Denzel Washington, which I think goes with the other movies that we've watched so far this month in our Don't Cross Denzel Washington pile, because I don't really feel like crossing him. He acts the crap out of what he is given, even when it's crap. And Christopher Walken is in here doing his thing.
Licking his fingers a lot. He's got at least two scenes where he's licking his fingers with food. Maybe three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's talking about what an artist Denzel Washington is while he's licking his fingers.
Yeah, he's also licking his fingers in that opening scene where Denzel is also licking his fingers at the party. And then I feel like he's also, he may have licked some fingers at that the one where Peter gave him the little necklace.
We should really, it's too bad Tony Scott is no longer with us because we could talk to him about finger licking. Because
it's a Walken affectation. I'm certain it was his idea.
Is that something that you would get from an acting clinic, the Walken acting clinic?
Tip number 32.
Get it. Walken clinic.
Oh my God.
Walken clinic.
Walken. How do you spell his name? Walken acting clinic.
It's an E.
What was I going to say? You already derailed me from what I was going to say.
Sorry.
Ugh.
Was it about finger licking goodness?
No.
Badness?
No.
Actors?
I don't know.
Mark Anthony and what's her face not being particularly great, but everybody else being good?
I think it was about something about Denzel. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's good.
He's in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why it was selected. And I like him. I like him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody should ever do these things with film that this movie did.
Unless you're shooting a music video, in which case it's okay.
Oh, God. No, not even. I mean, what, a music video from, like, 1998, maybe. I don't know what's going on with this.
2004, you know, he's doing a thing with film for a time.
Did this feel like a 2004 film?
I feel like it fits anywhere between like 99 and 2007. Because we had bad taste long after we thought we stopped. Like the mid 2000s were still quite cringy in a lot of cultural ways.
Yes, that is very true. Accurate statement. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Dan, for reminding me.
Oh, I remember what I was going to ask. Did you notice Denzel's weird broken pinky finger in this movie?
No, I did not.
It's very noticeable in this one because when he's holding the gun up, his right pinky sort of goes towards the grip of the gun and then down towards the bottom of the gun.
Oh.
I think he got it repaired sometime after this movie, but it was like a high school college football injury or something. So it's like his right hand pinky finger, when he like bends his hand a certain way, is kind of like at like a 45 degree angle. It's not great.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So,
are you sad that I made you watch this movie? Is this an okay Denzel movie for you to watch?
I feel like I was missing something prior to having seen it, because I was not in on the experience of it.
Yeah, it probably made more sense in a theater, and now you're just sort of, I'm like reliving any of those feelings out off of that experience, and it doesn't really work on a smaller screen, probably. Or are you thinking you just would have gotten like seasick watching this in a theater?
Yeah, that the second thing, because I mean, something like Cloverfield, which I saw in a movie theater, that left me unwell. I just...
All right. Rank them. Cloverfield, Man on Fire, Incredibles 2. Which one made everyone sicker and is going to cause more Twitter outrage if it's released in 2018?
I'm going to say Cloverfield. But, I mean, I think it causes the most... I think Incredibles 2 will still cause the most outrage because it's a cartoon. It's supposed to be for children. My kids should be able to see it, and they're two. And I didn't check that the rating was PG because I don't check ratings on animated movies because all animated movies are for kids.
I feel like I can tell from your tone of voice that you're mocking this person.
I'm mocking every person who threw a fit over this movie. But, you know...
But it was so unnecessary, Joe. It wasn't needed.
It's not that it was unnecessary. It is that it was in the movie. And if you go to certain screenings, they have warnings in front of the movie. But also, I think literally every review that I read had a warning about it. And if the movie says parental guidance, do you know what you should do as a parent?
Have some guidance?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, I'm sorry. People have busy lives, and they don't have time to make sure that their children can watch certain things, so they should just, you know, feed them whatever it is that comes out of the Disney tube.
Yeah, you just put the iPad in front of them and let them go wild.
Yeah. I mean, I once knew somebody who was like, yeah, I'm going to let my kid watch the Avengers, and they're like four, and it's like, I don't know. And then it's like, yeah, they're punching everybody. It's like, maybe that has something to do with ages and appropriateness for maturity levels, and maybe back off on that one.
Hmm. Do you think Man on Fire should have had a warning at the beginning that said, warning, a lot of flickery, over crank, under crank, multiple exposures here?
No.
May induce headaches or seizures. Illegal search and seizures.
She sells seizures by the seashore. This movie, here's the thing. It's not that I'm not upset because I am like ill from watching that. I am upset because it's dumb.
It's
so
cool,
there's
Joe,
a different
if you don't
thing.
Think it's cool, you're wrong, or you're the wrong audience.
Well, somebody can prove me wrong because I don't see the point in it. Someone can explain to me how the exposures in a certain fragment of this film meant something to this character in some way, or were supposed to put us in his position.
It's really about his scattered and fragmented state of mind in a lot of these high-stress situations.
But it isn't, because there's so many of these where he's clear-headed.
Maybe
it's
just a physical manifestation of his PTSD. You don't know. We could ask the cinematographer. We just can't ask Tony Scott.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk to the cinematographer.
You guys aren't on speaking terms.
No. Something tells me he would have been receptive of my criticism of his work. But I feel like this is... there's a lot of stuff in here that is not motivated, as they say. Motivated. For
Style
people at home...
Have to be motivated. Does color correction have to be motivated?
It doesn't have to be motivated.
Yeah.
But it can be motivated. Yeah. Well, I don't like Wes Anderson movies. So there you go.
And this is another episode of Joe Dislikes Things.
Well, I feel like that's unfair to me.
Say something nice about the movie.
I like Denzel.
Yeah.
And I mean, Dakota Fanning was good.
This is Denzel Waugh-Ishtington, so it's really, as long as we're focused on him, he's good.
Yeah. He's good. Like I said, every actor, including Dakota Fanning, is good except for the parents, Mark Anthony and what's her face. They're bad.
Rhoda Mitchell.
Yes, Rhoda Mitchell. Everybody else is good. Like everybody else, they can keep doing their thing.
They will be happy to know that you've approved them for further acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Particularly the Italian guy who is in lots of stuff. I believe he also played an Interpol agent in Hannibal, but I'd have to check that. Giovanni.
Giancarlo Gianni?
Yeah.
Giannini.
Yes.
Why did I not think he was Italian?
He's very Italian.
La Spezia, Liguria, Italy? Where is this?
It's in Italy. Liguria.
Where is Liguria? I don't know where that is. Is this middle? Is this southern? This is southern Italy is what it looks like. Oh, wait. Zoom out. Zoom. I'm zooming. Oh, this is very northern Italy.
Yes.
It's a little peninsula-ish area. Nice little area there.
Okay.
It looks, where?
Does that impact how you feel about his acting in any way?
A little. Yeah, it helps
frame it.
His performances. Yeah, he's about halfway mm-hmm. between Florence and Genoa, so that's for reference.
Yeah.
Sake.
Yeah, that frames your idea of his performance as a Mexican federal agent.
Yeah, I mean, he smoked a lot, and he, like, waved his smoke out of the way of his face a couple of times, which means he smokes a lot, but he's aware that it's a bad habit, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, he wasn't Hannibal. He was Inspector Rinaldo Pazzi.
Yes, see, I knew it.
Oh, he was also Rene Mathis in Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm. He's in lots of things.
Yeah. Mathis.
When I saw him, I was like, I know you. You're that Italian actor who's been in lots of things. But, he's good in this. He does his thing as his agent that is fed up with everything. What did you think of the end credits, by the way?
There was something notable about the end credits?
Well, Denzel Washington dies in the car, and then it flashes his death date on the screen, and it has the black and white slow down almost photos of the voice being shot for resisting arrest, basically, by Italian cop. So what'd you think of that?
I think if they didn't do that, the audience was gonna go, but wait a minute, he got away with it. The whole goal of Creasy was to kill everyone involved and who profited and to stop this whole cycle of kidnapping of the kids, and he was so close, but then he died.
Yeah, but wasn't it weird that the cop who was trying to change the system and who didn't want to kill people and was very upset about what Creasy was doing was like, yeah, I'm going to totally murder the guy with a shot to the head?
I don't know that he was super upset about what Creasy was doing. I think he was partially sad that Creasy was gone because Creasy was helping. And Creasy had sort of cleared the path. He had gotten rid of everybody. He had identified, helped them identify who the voice is, the head boss guy. And he saw a path and he took it. And I think he totally murdered the voice. It wasn't just like, oh no, to stop resisting. He was just like,
it's very obvious from the way they shot that he flat out murdered the guy. But in the thing it says, you know, resisting arrest.
Yeah, he saw an opportunity. He'd been working hard to get there. Creasy got them right up to the goal line. He's like, you know what? This is for Creasy. Taking this all the way. And then he put him down. I mean, they needed that for the movie to, like, make sense to people.
I guess.
Can't let the bad guys win, even if Creasy's gonna die.
Yeah.
Because bad guys are bad.
Guys are bad.
It's in the name right there.
Thank you for that clarification, Dan.
Sometimes a bad guy can be good. Is this a bad, bad guy, a good, bad guy, or a bad guy you kind of like?
I mean, there are those that exist, you know.
Oh, sure. Hans Gruber is a bad guy I kind of like.
Yeah. I would say none of the bad guys in this film have any charisma, but
Ramius in everyone's favorite submarine movie is a good bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only other examples I need.
Okay, I was gonna say Ursula the Sea Witch.
Oh sure,
yeah.
You know the fella who played the other man on fire, Scott Glenn.
Yes,
he was in that Red October movie.
Wow,
he had eyeglasses that were the size of my head.
Oh, he was the captain
of the American ship.
Oh wow, I didn't even recognize him with those glasses on.
Because they're gigantic, you can't see anything other than his glasses. He kind of looks like Roy Scheider when he's got those things on.
Wow, this really came full circle, didn't it? But yes, that thus concludes another episode of Denzel Worcestershire sauce.
Wagestishington.
Yes.